welcome to All Things Botanical, a podcast for those who want to forge a deeper connection with nature. I am your host, Michaela Morgan, and on today's episode, we'll be doing an industry deep dive, finding out what it's like to be an aromatherapist. Today's episode is close to my heart, and one I have been wanting to record since I set out to start this podcast. As you know, I am a qualified aromatherapist, but in recent years, I've become quite disheartened with the industry after the rise in essential oils being sold as part of multi-level marketing schemes. Essential oils are powerful plant extracts, which have a depth beyond the beautiful fragrances we all love. Each has an array of unique therapeutic benefits, which under the guidance of a professional, can be used to help treat both physical and emotional health concerns. Today, we'll be speaking with Pat Princey-Jones, aromatherapist and author of A Scented Life, Aromatherapy Reimagined. Pat's book reignited the spark in me, and my passion for aromatherapy has never been stronger. Her book is a voyage of discovery into the beauty of nature and peels back the veil beyond the fragrance of essential oils, allowing you to peer into the depth of potential these plant extracts can have on your life. For the seasoned blender or new beginner, A Scented Life has everything you need to know about aromatherapy and is a guide on how to bring more botanicals into your life. So join me as I nerd out with Pat over our shared love for aromatherapy. So welcome, Pat. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and asking me to be part of this. It's wonderful.
I'm very excited to have you join us on the podcast and very grateful for your time. So you're an aromatherapist and an author as well. So you've just written A Scented Life, Aromatherapy Reimagined. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got into aromatherapy and when you decided to make the career change full time?
So I'm an aromatherapy advocate and specialist and educator. I'd say I'd probably call myself that because my experience that I've had in the industry is very much about educating others and very much about, you know, spreading the work on a retail level. Yeah. I think I tell this story all the time, but my background is I'm an English teacher. I taught high school English for many, many years, almost two decades, in fact. And then I went on a retreat to Bali 30 years ago. And it really was a defining moment in my career at that time. I wasn't expecting what happened to happen. Mm-hmm. But look, it was a love affair. The instant it occurred, I was introduced to jasmine oil. And at the time, I didn't even know what aromatherapy was. I'd never heard the term before, and suddenly I meet two aromatherapists who are also holidaying in the same bungalow as myself, and we formed this incredible connection, and they delighted me not just each day but every minute of each day with all the applications and the practice of aromatherapy. So I didn't know anything about the oils, but suddenly there was this chest of 40 of the most beautiful, exquisite oils from all over the world, and we were using them every day in foot treatments, hair treatments, at night if we went out dancing and came home and I had tired, aching feet. It was a beautiful foot bath with peppermint and grapefruit.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
It was if we couldn't sleep at night, it was a beautiful, relaxing, soothing oils like the chamomiles and the lavender. But I think the highlight of the whole time was that it was about using the oils every day on your skin, mm-hmm, as a moisturizer for whatever you needed or wanted on that day. The sisters were big on, they used to call it aromatic dressing, okay, and it was called dressing from the inside out. So you pick the oils that you wanted, you mix them in a bowl with jojoba carrier oil, yeah, and then you apply them to your skin from toe to neck. And, of course, because we were in Bali, it was hot, it was quite languorous, we were on holiday, we wanted to feel quite sexy, you know.
Yeah.
So it was jasmine, ylang-ylang, rose, neroli. All of the florals and exotic florals were part of the mixes we made each day pretty much. Wow. And we'd go out and just delight in them. So, yeah, every morning I just indulged in these scented blends I'd make. So you can imagine, how do you ever come home from a holiday like that and just think, oh, well, that was a nice experience. What's next?
Yeah.
It was like, there's no looking back from that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so were they just other holiday makers that happened to be aromatherapists, or
yes,
how did you meet them?
So they were just, it was pure coincidence that one of the sisters of one of the very first companies in Australia that was to articulate the healing benefits of pure essential oils, but with a difference. Mm. And what they were doing was they actually were running really inspiring and very educational two-day workshops across Australia. It was like a movement, mm-hmm, 30 years ago that was sweeping across the country. Mm-hmm. They weren't just like in a little backyard or selling an oil, a bottle of oil here or there. They decided, no, we're going to empower Australian women. We want to make a difference in their lives. We want to give them access to these amazing oils. We don't want them to just come to us one-off or buy an oil and get a little booklet on it. We want them to come and see the ways you can use the oils. So that my introduction was doing those activities and all those methods of use. And they went to Bali for the same reason that I went to Bali. The idea was we'd gone there to, I don't know, revive our marriage. Is that the word?
Yeah. Yeah.
To restore our marriages.
Yeah.
And, well, we won't talk about that at this level of the workshop, but it certainly, it formed a partnership and a friendship between us that was to endure for a very long time.
Yeah,
because
wow.
Because what happened was they lived in Melbourne, I lived in Sydney, so they came home to Melbourne after the holiday and I went back home to Sydney, mm-hmm, with my ex-husband. And then they decided, well, we actually need a school teacher, because I was happily teaching Shakespeare, you know, it ran
yeah
with girls. I loved teaching. I loved young women and I loved teaching high school English.
Yeah.
And they thought, no, we need her because we need to now write programs because we want to have big workshops and we want to do booklets and we want someone
wow
to edit our writing. And that's where I began with them really, and then was using the oils for myself.
Wow. So you went over there to,
yeah,
you know, work on your marriage and found your soulmates.
Yes, and I went over there and they were doing the same thing. Judith was doing exactly the same thing. She was over there to revive her marriage. And look, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
It's more than a coincidence. She and I and her husband and my husband, the four of us, were sharing a bungalow.
It's
and
meant
we
to
didn't
be
book it. We didn't book it. It was destiny.
Yeah.
I call it destiny. And that was the beginning. And, of course, I went back to work. And I just drove everybody crazy. I was doing aromatic tissues for the students. Back then you were allowed to. You didn't,
yeah,
you couldn't do it now.
Yeah.
But back then the parents just thought it was wonderful. The kids just loved it. If a girl was breaking up with a boyfriend or if she had period pains, cramping, or if she was heartbroken or if she couldn't study because she couldn't concentrate, I was sure to have a little blend on a tissue for her that she could tuck into her top pocket. And, of course, all my friends,
yeah,
every single friend that walked in the door at home, I'll sit down, I'm going to make you a blend, I'm going to give you a foot treatment, let me give you a hair massage, a neck and shoulder massage. And that's where it all started. I fell in love with aromatherapy. I ended up leaving to English teaching. I finally left Shakespeare for Basil.
Oh, that's so exciting. What a journey.
Yeah. So that's where
it's definitely like that, though. I feel like, I don't know if you're a bit of a natural problem solver, like you like solving problems. I feel like aromatherapy is really exciting in that sense because you're like, okay, this is what's going on and then I can use XYZ oil to fix it. And it's like, it's kind of fun and it's exciting that you can try and experiment a little bit that way.
Yeah, it's really fun. And my training, because one of the questions I know that you ask is like, what was your training? And obviously,
mm-hmm,
I've got formal training,
mm-hmm,
that came later, but imagine the joy of actually beginning with books and reading, and then it was always about show and tell. Mm-hmm. It was always about running these two-day workshops around Australia. And I got to meet some of the most amazing women, like one of my closest friends as a result of it. We trained together under the two sisters that started in Essence Aromatherapy. Mm-hmm. Her name's Kim Morrison. Mm-hmm. And we both just delighted in each other. We had to go into, like 10-day rigorous trainings together with the sisters before we could take over the two-day workshops. And to this very day, we forged a friendship that's endured, and she's now an author, she's a presenter, you know, she's just an incredible woman and still a dedicated advocate of aromatherapy, because aromatherapy is not just about a recipe, I've got a headache, here's the recipe. It is so much more than that. It's about the whole link between being moved, really, in a way, soulful, I would call it, that you can take an oil. The first thing, you engage with it through the power of scent. And then in that instant, within a split second, that activates a cascade effect in your brain into the limbic system. And immediately you decide, yes, I like it, no, I don't. Or the brain goes, oh, yes, I've smelled this before. And then when was it? And what was the memory? And up comes the hippocampus and pulls it out and says, here it is. This is the smell, like for me, of your mother's cooking when she chopped basil in the kitchen when you were a little girl. And all these decades later, as a mature woman, I'm still moved to tears when I think of her in that kitchen chopping basil and making pasta sauce for me. And that very evocative smell, that minty, pungent smell that we all associate and love with basil.
Oh, that's so lovely. Yes. It really does. It does have such a strong effect on your emotions.
Yeah.
And I think for me, what made me fall in love with it, which I think I share your feeling or sentiment, is the memories that it unlocks. It's just, it smacks you straight in the face as soon as it goes up your nose. It's just, you could have forgotten about that memory for years, and then it comes straight back. It's so interesting.
And then you just said it then, it smacks you in the face in that moment. And so in that moment, when you're engaging with scent and when you're making blends or formulating a blend and trying to decide what's the best mix, what's a beautifully balanced synergy or blend, you are totally present. Mm-hmm. You're actually in the present moment. One of my favourites is to just fill a beautiful bowl, a stainless steel bowl, big enough to fit both your feet in it.
Yeah.
To fill it with cool water, tepid water, and then to put in your peppermint, your juniper berry, your grapefruit, a bit of bergamot, even lemon, and then just a couple of drops of each, you know, shake the water, and then just stick your feet in it and relax and work away at your computer. The feet just connect, they polarize the two extremes of the body. Mm-hmm. So that suddenly you feel the cooling right to the top of your skull. Wow. It's just incredible. It does it. You're aware of the fact that there is that, you know, those connective tissues that run through the lymph nodes and the meridians. And, you know, I love the whole idea of the meridians.
Oh, and that's the best part, I think. That's the best part. The face. The meridians on the face is life-changing. Oh, it's so interesting. Oh, we need to get back to that.
Oh, look, I could talk about it all year long.
Well, I think let's go back to a bit of your journey. And so how did your blending journey begin? So once you'd done a bit of your course and you'd played around, did you start with oils or did you get into making soaps or salt?
No. Like definitely that. No soaps for me.
Yeah.
No, it was straight into really serious blending.
Yeah.
I've been so privileged that I, as the national training manager for In Essence, I was also given the task of creating blends. And my colleague Morella and I, back at In Essence, we formulated the first of a series for the company, the first of a series of therapeutic blends, like, you know, breathe, sleep, hay fever, balance for PMS. And then we did such a great job that then I was given the task of doing the lifestyle blends, like, you know, Harmony, etc.
Yeah.
And then after that, I came up with my own idea of doing Australian native blends, and I did the Rock Creek. Yeah, my boss was really impressed with that. And I did that based on a Dorothea McKellar poem. I just remember I love a sunburnt country, you know, a land of sweeping plains and rugged mountain ranges. And I thought, I'm just going to do a set of oils on that, just five oils.
So good.
And that was 5 years ago. That was the last big project I had with them.
Yeah.
But no, yes, I did that. So in order to do that, I had to learn the fundamentals of perfume making, of top, middle, base note blending, of what it is to create synergies. So, yes.
So let's talk about that, actually. So that's one of my questions. So let's break down the art of blending. So how important would you say are the top, middle, and base notes if you are making a blend?
Well, no, not at all, because I wouldn't want to discourage anyone who was listening and thought, oh my god, no, that's why I've got a beginner's section in my book. It's called, you know, for the beginner, and they're two oil blends. That's a very simple little combo of two oils just to make it like I'm blending. My god, I can use more than one oil together. But I think the first thing in blending that you've got to establish, you've got to say to yourself, what is my blend, what's the purpose of it, what's it for? In just a really quick thing, look, at the moment, I just want a beautiful smell in my home. I want to get out the dog smell. I want to get rid of the smell from cooking last night. I want it to be something beautiful, or I love florals, or it's spring, for God's sake. Throw open the windows and the doors and bring the spring in, but I'm going to enhance it with beautiful top note citrus oils. So the choice then would be really for pleasure and etc. The other thing you could decide in blending is, actually, at the moment, it's COVID, everyone's locked down, especially in Melbourne. We're stressed, we're feeling anxious. So I want something for emotional balance. So then you'd go about picking the oils based on their emotional activity or action.
Like therapeutic action.
And then I'd do something where I wanted a remedy. So the remedy would now be, I've got indigestion, I've got arthritis, I've got gout, I've got a mild headache. So then I'm going to make a blend for that. So there's protocols to follow in all three sections. And I think what the viewer needs to know, we'll come to top, middle, and base note, because I'll give you the quick, brief highlight. But what I'd like to share with you and your listener, number one, it's all about the dose. It's all about the frequency. So if you want a beautiful blend for your home, you don't need to do more than 6 to 9 drops, unless otherwise you've been given instruction, directed to do so. And honestly, I never diffuse for more than 1 to 3 hours. I never put it on for 12 hours and just go flick. The oils haven't got that ability to keep on moving in the air. There's a point at which they dissipate. So top, middle, base note actually refers to the rate of evaporation of an essential oil particle. So it's the rate of evaporation. So the top notes are really quick, gone within an hour. Not, you haven't got much more really after that. And then your middle note are your heart notes. So they're the heart of the blend. I usually put more middle notes in. And then base notes are what hold the blend, because they've got longevity and they last for a lot longer. They're quite often fixatives in perfumery, and they have the holding, staying power. So they help deliver it. They hold the other oils into the blend and help deliver it into the body, or keep it active for longer. So that's how I would, as a beginner or as a home user, that's how I would use top, middle, and base note into blending if I fell back, defaulted into wanting to use top, middle, and base note.
And it's also, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's usually what you'll smell. If you bend over your blend and you go to smell it, you'll usually hit the top notes first, because what you were saying, they evaporate the quickest. So if you're feeling like your blend is too citrusy, because normally there'll be citrus is a top note, you can add more depth by the bass note or the middle note to balance that out.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the bass notes, you usually, I wouldn't have more than 10% maybe a bass note when I use them. And look, there's no doubt that when you're blending for, like, for someone and you're selling the blend, you know, you're making it for a, like an aromatherapist was making it for a client.
Mm-hmm.
The aromatherapist would first and foremost have to say, okay, how much do you want to spend?
Yeah.
Because if I made you a blend with neroli and, you know, helichrysum in it, it's going to, and frankincense,
yeah,
the fig, the money, and the sandalwood, the money's going to start going, the drops are going to start costing.
Yeah.
So obviously price is a factor, the whatever the value is of it. And then what you think of the blend that you've made. So at work, we always get a whole lot of the people out of the office and blind test the samples we've come down with and say, which one do you like? Which combo do you like when they smell it? And we always look at the reaction. And then there's always going to be someone that goes, oh, I hate that smell. I hate lavender. And you think, really? Well, 90% of the population loves lavender.
Yeah.
So it just depends. It really depends. So they're all important factors in blending.
Mm-hmm.
And then accuracy of number of drops is important,
mm-hmm.
recording those drops. And then finally, the most important thing, I think, after dose and frequency is knowing your oils, mm-hmm. Your response to them. And also there are certain oils you got to be careful with them because at the end of the day they are concentrated liquids.
Mm-hmm.
They are powerful, potent little things that are used by the plant itself,
mm-hmm.
you know, to protect it, to procreate, you know, for pollination purposes, to defense against bacteria. So they've got natural plant chemicals in them that can make your skin red or sensitize it. They can make you sick. They can give you nausea. They could trigger an attack of some sort if you were weak or sick. So you need to check all of the safety data that goes with the oils and with the oil. And a reputable company always supplies you with all that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And also not listening to just like Joe Blow down the road, like what might happen with them is going to have a totally different reaction, both on your emotional, physical response, but also with the safety. So it is really important to talk with professionals.
I'm a member of IAMA,
mm-hmm.
Which is the International Academy of Aromatherapy Medics in this country, in Australia. Mm-hmm. Proper aromatherapist. I'm an associate member, but the women that are in that group, they are such proficient aromatherapists and they're all practicing. So my advice to anyone listening, if you want to just enjoy the oils and enjoy the sensory experience of the captivating aroma, that's fantastic. Go right ahead. Align yourself with a company that you believe in, that you trust. But once you now then start going down the path of you want something for even emotional, if it's anxiety and stress, and you want it long term, let alone if it's for, you know, period pains or if it's, you know, a cough or something, let alone if it's for mental health, you must engage a clinician.
Mm-hmm.
And that's someone who's qualified and who is a practicing clinician.
Yeah.
And I would look up, you can easily sort of look it up, Google it. They'd be online registered as such.
Yeah. No, it's so important. I definitely agree. And I think that's why I did my qualification because I just.
What was yours? You've got a diploma, haven't
you? Yeah, so I've got a diploma, level 3 diploma in aromatherapy, mm-hmm. and I also have a diploma in beauty therapy where mm-hmm. – so we did – in the beauty therapy, we did up to 20 oils,
mm-hmm.
but that to me – I didn't. That wasn't enough for me. As mm-hmm. you were saying before, once you start, you can't stop. I decided, no, I'm going to go on and do – they call it post-grad study.
Yeah.
And so I did a full diploma through a different institution that gave me – we did 42 different oils.
Great.
And all of their – we did like the botanical name, mm-hmm. the constituents, like the plant mm-hmm. family. Like mm-hmm. we had to do case study after case study after case study. And, yeah, it was really in-depth. But I loved it.
Yeah.
I found it so interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, part of my course, and I'm talking 25 years ago that I did my course, I was just really lucky back then. All the colleges, whether you were at Endeavor College or the Academy of Medicine, they were all using Salvatore Battaglia's The Complete Guide to Aromatherapy, yeah. which is still recognized as one of the core books for any aromatherapy course.
Yeah, we used that as well.
Yeah, that was my course book. And so I really had good grounding mm-hmm. and I was able to study from his book. And mm-hmm. he's always sort of been like my mentor, and then I did his master classes that he ran. Yeah, and I did a massage course. And I had to do sales courses. I had to do courses that were public speaking and doing international workshops with 100 people. So my background is very different. Mm. Kim Morrison and I had a very different skill set and training set to a clinician mm-hmm. who's in a room and you go to her one-on-one.
Yeah. So let's talk about the plants themselves. We touched on this a little bit. So you mentioned that the plants use their oils naturally to survive. So mm-hmm. do you want to just explain that a little
yes.
bit more?
Yes. So look, even I remember I was fascinated when I read Marcel Lavarde, mm-hmm. his book in aromatherapy, like we're talking about. He's one of the trailblazers, like Judith, like Salvatore, like Tisserand. And I read his book and it was all on plant families and
yep.
plant groups and understanding that. And I never thought of it. Like I thought basil made basil for pesto sauce, you know. I thought, oh, the basil must be. They knew it was going to be great in the basil sauce, and it's fantastic. The coriander was for the fish, but it's not at all.
Yeah,
like the plant produces, and not all plants produce essential oils.
Yeah,
so that's what we've got to get at. Not all plants produce essential oils. I think there are 300 plants, maybe 500. I'm not sure. I can't remember the exact number.
Yeah,
but they do it firstly. To communicate with other plants.
Yeah.
Firstly, to attract mm-hmm. pollinators. Like think of jasmine's, you know, intoxicating scent. She's the midnight temptress.
That's my
All
favorite.
The bees and hummingbirds come to her exact location.
Yeah.
And indirectly she pollinates the planet because as they go off, they take that and then they pollinate and then they procreate.
Yeah.
They use it to repel unwanted bugs and insects from coming and approaching, like the basil.
Mm.
We love the smell of it, but I'm telling you, there are bugs that don't. And as soon as they come towards it and it releases the basil from its secret compartments, as I call them, those insects take off. They do it to defend their immediate territory, and I love this one the most because when I had a herb garden mm-hmm. I used to grow rosemary as part of the border of the herb garden to yes. prevent other weeds and plants from germinating nearby
yes.
because rosemary releases like a camphor, a cineol, 1.8 cineol into the soil that prevents other plants from germinating nearby. And then of course another way is it protect. Think of the frankincense tree and myrrh, and they produce this incredible resin.
Mm.
Well, it's to protect when they get bacteria, if they've been cut, incised, they release their sap and it prevents, it does a quick heal, heals yeah. it, like our blood when it coagulates.
Yeah.
But the best example that I use is of, because this is dear to me and this is why I created the Rangers blend.
Yeah.
Is think of, I'm from Sydney, so I used to go down to the Blue Mountains to stay at the metro in the Blue Mountains, and we used to go to the lookout, and I'd look out at, you know, hundreds of acres of endless forests of eucalyptus trees.
Yeah.
And there'd be this blue haze over the top of them. And I used to think, it's magic. It must be magic. It must be the reflection. It's all to do with the essential oil of eucalyptus that they release.
Yeah.
And why do they release it? To cool the tree, to cool it from the middle of the scorching sun, midday sun. And then if you look further into it, what is that? What is that oil they're dripping? It's got 1.8 cineol in it. It's got a eucalyptol in it. And what is eucalyptol when we use it? When we extract it and put it into a bottle, it's a decongestant.
Yeah.
It cools us. So if we've got a sore joints, you'd say to people, put peppermint, eucalyptus and lavender in your blend and maybe some rosemary. Give yourself a good massage and obviously put it into a carrier oil, but yeah, mix it with a carrier oil and rub it into your skin. And you just think, oh, my God, what we're doing, we're tapping into what the plant has produced for its own survival. And we're talking about not 50 years of chemistry.
Yeah.
Or science.
Yeah.
We're talking about millions of years of evolution.
Yeah.
For the procreation of the race, just like humans want to procreate. What have we done?
I know, it almost seems so obvious it's funny that we don't think about it, or we don't, like, for humans to be so advanced, as we say, yeah, in terms of our, like,
technology.
Yeah. And our brain capacity and all of our knowledge, like, we're kind of ignorant, yeah, in my opinion.
Because I remember when I first learned that from Marcel Lavar, I just, because what I do is I learn something and then I think, oh, how does it apply to every oil? So I wanted to know, well, so what are the rhizomes and ginger? What are they for? What about, why is this underground mass of roots under vetiver? Why? Mm. Why is it, why is the plant needed these massive roots that have this earthy, pungent smell, sweet, pungent, earthy smell.
Mm.
So I started to then research, and I've got, look, the most incredible library of books, but notes as a teacher. And it's the teacher side in me that's forever doing research.
So let's break down the extraction method. So we know that the plants have oils. So how do we get the oils out and put them into bottles, and call them essential oils in a nutshell?
Yes. So in a nutshell, just as I said before, they are stored in cells, glands, ducts, secret compartments, I call them. I always refer to them as their little secret compartments. They're either on the outside or they're on the inside of the plant part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depending where they're located, that's what requires the main methods of extraction. And look, the two main ones probably at this point are definitely steam distillation is the very main one, you know, for the flowering tops, for leaves, etc. And for citrus, for the peel, for the outer peel of the fruit, it's compressing. It's like a form of extraction is where they press the outside skin to release the oil. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's CO2 extraction for oils that you've got to take out that you can't put through any heat steam distillation process. So you've got to go through the concrete and then it becomes an absolute and then it's got to be called an absolute.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a hypercritical extraction like for ginger, again, CO2,
mm-hmm,
which is supposedly the purest but very costly.
Yeah.
To maintain it because it keeps more of the molecules intact. Then there's fractionated steam distillation for ylang ylang because it's graded through different fractionated processes, and so is rose can be cohobated. So there's a whole lot of different types within the main ones.
Yeah.
But that, look, every time we speak about something, that's why it's so important to be with a company that has either the original founder on board or an expert and who is at least getting their oils from the most reputable supplier in the country who knows exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on that, let's talk about natural versus synthetic. So where can people buy good quality oils that are sustainably manufactured and you can feel confident that the manufacturing process is done properly and it hasn't been flushed with additives to kind of make the oil last longer?
Okay, so in Australia, there is one exceptional supplier of essential oils to all the top companies that are recognized as the top companies. And I mean, you know who those top companies are. Mm-hmm. There are several of them. You know, obviously I work for two, mm-hmm. but I also, the master himself has his own. So there are, I like people to pick their own in a way.
Okay? Yeah, and do their own research.
It's easy to Google where I am, yeah. what Kim's doing, what Salvatore is doing. It's very easy to do that, to source it. But I would definitely be inclined to go with a company that has an established reputation.
Yeah.
That have a presence online. Mm-hmm. They have a website. They've got social media. They've got a team of people. They run workshops.
Yeah.
You know, they've got an aromatherapist on board who you can access and talk to.
Yeah.
They're not just all about marketing and spin.
Yeah.
Because I'm very worried about companies that all they do is a whole lot of marketing spin, and what they do is say how great they are and how pure their oils are at the expense of other companies.
Yeah.
And then you need to decide, do you want oils that are TGA listed because your interest is very therapeutic, or do you want organic, certified organic? Mm-hmm. And the great thing about Australia is essential oils that are ACO, Australian Certified Organic, well, they're certified.
Yeah.
So you know you're getting an organic oil. And there are several companies that are just starting to deliver, but certified organic. Because I can say everything I'm selling is organic. Actually, everything is organic. If it's a pure essential, I'm organic.
Yeah.
Carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, just like essential oils. We're all organic. And a natural product is 100% pure and authentic. A synthetic is usually fabricated in a laboratory to replicate the smell of an essential oil.
Yeah.
So it might smell nice and you'll love the smell. And look, there's no doubt that smell can have a placebo effect and make you feel great.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the therapeutic indication and action that a natural oil would have.
Okay,
you'll probably find that a pure oil is going to be more cost money or different money depending on whether it's sandalwood or orange.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a big price gap. Whereas a synthetic oil, you might find they're actually all the same price.
Yeah, that's a really good indication I think people could look out for. And also remembering, I think it's easy to forget that, you know, the oils come from plants, which means that the plants have to be in a way destroyed to make the oil, like sacrifice, if you'd say, to make the oil. So if there's a mass production of a particular oil, that means there's a mass slaughter of plants as well. So
there could be a decline. And actually, as you say that, there are endangered plants at the moment, Australian sandalwood, frankincense, rosewood. So you need to go with a company that is fully aware of this so that when they're using rosewood in one of their blends, that it's sites approved, that it's from the twigs, and it's not the whole tree hasn't been cut down to get the rosewood.
Yeah.
It's from the terminal branches that will grow back from that tree. And I know when I first started 30 years ago in aromatherapy, you could still buy 100ml bottles of oils. It was Indian sandalwood. It was expensive, but now it's off the charts expensive.
Yeah.
So to buy Santal or Malbum, you buy 4ml bottles. You've got to order it usually. And that's why we started using our own Australian sandalwood, though they are growing Santal or Malbum WA, in the north of WA. They've got plantations ready to go. But it takes decades for it to grow before you can get to the oil. And you got to cut down the tree, and the tree needs host trees because it's a parasite. Like, it's just understanding the whole growing process of a tree and what's involved. Like, people say to me, you know, how come sandalwood costs so much money? And I go, because it takes 10 years to 15, 20 years in some cases for it to grow before you can access the oil.
Yeah.
Still the oil. And of course it's going to cost a lot of money.
I know. And that's just evidence as well of the disconnect between when you buy something in a shop to the supply chain, I guess,
how
it got there. And it just, if there's a company that has good consideration for its environmental impact, I think that's really important.
I know that Vox, V-O-X, who give the annual reporting on how much lavender was grown, mm-hmm. and how much lavender was sold on the market, on the commercial market. And the amount sold commercially is 4 times the amount that was actually grown.
What?
Yeah, so where's the other 3 times coming from?
That's crazy.
So I ask you, where? So that is just an example of how much reconstituted, stretched, synthetic, aroma chemical lavender or another species of lavender is on the market. I was invited to speak at the Maternal Healthcare Nurses Conference at Safe Sleep Space Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cindy Davenport is a very good friend of mine, and I was just given 1 hour to do how aromatherapy could help nurses and babies sleep, relax, unwind. And I added a few things in the mix, like feeling feminine or PMS, etc. And yeah. I can remember one of the women asked me, she was quite, you know, testy. Yes, she said, anyway, I read that lavender's dangerous to use in pregnancy. And I said, look, you're right. Some species of lavender have really high levels of camphor in them, and they're not suitable, like lavandine, Stoas mm-hmm. lavender. But if you've got Lavandula and Gustafolia mm-hmm. from a reputable company, that has very low and quantities of camphor. Mm-hmm. Or none at all. I think, yeah, just very low quantities. And that's all checked by the company that's supplying it. And that's why they've put the botanical species is so important, because I think there's something like 30 to 50 species of the genus Lavandula.
Yeah.
But you know that that's an important part of understanding an essential oil and understanding it, the not just the genus but also the species.
Yeah, it's very, and I think that's a good point, because it is very scientific. It's not just the fragrance. It's definitely
not just the aroma.
Yeah.
And also then there's the chemotype. So, you know, you might buy thyme, and whether it's chemotype linalool or whether it's thymol, and whether it's, you know, phenolic, or whether it's got a monoterpenol, an alcohol in it, completely changes the safety guideline for that oil, and who can and can't and should and shouldn't use it, and when and how much is all. So you do need,
it's wonderful.
So if you're starting out, don't assume that because you can buy a bottle of essential oil in a shop or online that you automatically can use it however you want. Yeah. I'd be very careful about using too much, about using it medically if I'm not a clinician, and I'd be very careful about ingesting it unless I wouldn't ingest anything that if I didn't know where it was in the bottle and exactly what it was going to do to my liver. Mm. I would be very careful, and I would want an aromatherapist to prescribe it and to give it to me as a prescription for a limited time.
Yeah.
So it might be for a week or 2 weeks.
Definitely. Mm. Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's where, like we were talking about, where I became disheartened with aromatherapy and my understanding of it and the beauty of it and the health benefits like of prescribing it, and just this mass production for any Joe Blow to just like, oh, and put it in your water, and it just went against everything that I had learned and that I believed about it. And I just, it's really refreshing to talk about it.
That was a very disheartening phase of aromatherapy in Australia and worldwide, because you'd start to think, oh, my God, how do you defy or challenge an army, a platoon, a battalion of wellness agents?
Yeah.
What do you do? But, you know, ironically, they were able to put the spotlight on essential oil use and efficacy of essential oils. And I think for the first time, I think I said this to you when we were chatting before, that I think is the first time in the world, ironically, we travel to the moon, we're so techno-savvy, we seek evidence for everything. But I actually think that we're all yearning for something soulful, and this is the first time that aromatherapy might earn position in the lexicon of medicine, you know, of medical complementary medicine as an alternative and a complement, an adjunct to seeing a doctor, to doing that and actually get the recognition it deserves because of the power that it does have when you smell, when that particle hits your nose, your nostril, and what happens in the limbic system, let alone for its ability to travel into the circulatory system, and let alone what it does to those first layers of the skin when you first apply it. Like really any skin condition, whether it's eczema, whether you've got acne, if you went to an aromatherapist and got a really good treatment plan, you could definitely work on tinea, you could work on gout, you could work on eczema, you could work on, as I said, blemishes. Any skin condition, let alone a child who's got a mozzie bite, who's had a little cut. If you've got tea tree and lavender in the first aid cabinet on the end of a cotton tip, one drop, tip, 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 how lovely is that to be able to do that? It's just wonderful. And then you look at it and it's gone. I just love to see what aromatherapy does for young people like yourself. You've now started this wonderful site. You're just, how many people have you got following you? X number. Yeah. And you're going to make it to Y number. And why people are going to start coming to your site is not because you're promising anything at all, but because you are wholesome and genuine and authentic, and they will recognize your sincere belief in and passion for the oils and Mother Nature herself. And I'm going to tell you, Mother Nature cannot be outperformed. Do you understand?
It's so true.
You cannot. It, they, whatever you want to call, whatever pronoun you want to give it, Mother Nature, Mother Earth cannot be outperformed.
Yeah.
We can do whatever we want. It was sorry. When she decides, no, I've had it, that's it. That's it.
I know, it's so true. And that's exactly the essence and like the core of why I'm doing this. And I feel like I've come full circle with it. Like I think I originally was like worried about what I looked like being associated with it, and I got disheartened. But now I'm like, no, I 100% know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'd like to quote you from an article that I read about you while I was researching for the episode. So you say, "We can think of essential oils as having special powers inherited from the plant from the moment of extraction, powers that could be harnessed to improve the overall emotional, physiological, and spiritual well-being of the person." So I feel like that really captured how I personally feel about essential oils. So for those that are listening who have probably just used essential oils in like diffusers or really resonating with the fragrance, can you explain how essential oils can have like a positive effect on the emotional and physical body?
So the most remarkable thing, like a miracle inverted commas, you know, we could say, is that essential oils and aromatherapy is multifaceted and has a dual effect. So simultaneously, as you're preparing a blend, you're in the present moment. The rising vapors, you're inhaling them, it affects your mood. It can change moods within a second. You can go from feeling really flat and low to feeling buoyant and uplifted. You can go from feeling exhausted and grouchy and tired to actually having a little bit of a surge of energy. Look, it could even unlock creativity. It could even arouse sensuality in that moment, depending on the oil you choose. But at the same time, it will also, as you're using it and preparing the blend, you can then apply it to your body. So it has that physiological impact as well. And then if you are akin to, we talked about it before, talking about the chakras and the meridians in the body. And I mean, I love the chakras. I'm a novice at it. I'm not an expert at it. But I certainly got a chapter in my book about it, and it's actually one of my favorite chapters. Well, it's only 3 or 4 pages, I think, but I really spent a lot of time researching and then turning it into a creative piece that people could access, understand, and then utilize into a practice.
Mm.
And then if you think about it, if it does affect you on a psyche, and sometimes people say to me, oh, look, you know, you can't prove the existence of a psyche. Well, I can. It does for me. Like, hello? I hear a beautiful piece, and my girlfriend, Helena, just sent me. She burnt some tapes for me because during lockdown she thought, oh, Pat's on her own. You know, I'm going to burn her some beautiful, it's obvious classical music because we're into opera and classical music. She's discovered someone new. And look, she sent me these tapes and I'm working away and I'm bawling my eyes out. What's that? You know, that's the moment of awe. That's the moment of enlightenment, of soul. I was stirred.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? I call that my soul. What about when you see a beautiful child, the love for a mother for its child, or a sunset?
Yeah.
No, seriously?
Yeah.
There's no soul. The love when we feel our heart actually contract and expand.
Yeah.
So I think then they reach into the very core of our being.
So, Pat, you've written a book called A Centered Life, Aromatherapy Reimagined. Mm-hmm. So what was your thinking going into writing this book, and how did you want people to see aromatherapy?
Throughout the 30 years that I've been working in different capacities, everyone, well, after a workshop, it didn't matter whether I'm in New Zealand, in Hong Kong, or wherever I am, at the end of it, they'd always say, can't you record all your recipes? How are we going to remember all the recipes? We didn't have time to write them all down. So that got me thinking. And then I also thought, I remembered my struggle in the beginning. I loved all the books I read, but some of them were really challenging. They were in depth and they were thick volumes of information that I put it down and I think I'm going to have to read that again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to present something very accessible. As an English teacher, I always demystify and deconstruct information. You know, you can't teach Shakespeare to year 10 students who want to go out and like watching video, playing video games and, you know, watching television, soapies. You've got to turn it into a soapy for them to love it. You've actually got to turn the whole thing into a soapy. So I wanted to turn aromatherapy, demystify it, and make it very accessible. I wanted it to be creative, but most of all, so it's accessible, creative, but I wanted the book to be beautiful because aromatherapy for me is beautiful, it's sensual, it's sensory experience. And I wanted that to be reflected not only in the descriptions I wrote of the oils and of every thing that I wrote about, but in the beauty of the book itself.
It's just phenomenal. Like, just it caught my eye straight away. And I'm already a massive coffee table fan, but I just looked at it and the flow from start to finish as well, the way you introduce, you know, people to oils and what they're about, their history and everything, moving into the scent profiles, and then you give everybody the opportunity to have their own creations. Like, that's something that really reawoke my passion for aromatherapy, so I couldn't wait to interview you.
Oh, thank you. So look, there's something in it, and I wanted something in it for everyone, but I really wanted something for the beginner. So there's a lovely section for the beginner. I wanted something for those who just want to learn a bit about meditation and mindful practice using crystals. The book was built around the inhale chapter, which is giving you an oil, what its main activity is. For basil is for focus, a description of it, a recipe, what to do. But I do stipulate at the start of the inhale that I don't diffuse for more than 1 to 3 hours, and that some of the oils, I break the rule of 6 to 9 drops, and to modify that amount if it's too strong for you, and begin with open plan a diffusion. But that's for the advocate. And then there's sections, all the methods of use I think are covered beautifully, described with opportunities. And I love my section about mums and babies.
I wanted to talk to you about that actually, because I really, what I loved and you've just touched on, is how you condense the information to not be just like, you haven't taken any of the science or anything out, but you've just made it so accessible for anybody. And I really liked the safety tips and the information that you did for mums, like, you know, from labor and all the way through to young children. So do you want to elaborate a little bit on that for us?
Sure. But look, really, you have to go to an aromatherapist if you're pregnant. You can't self-prescribe or medicate at all.
Yeah.
So this is very basic. But I think the thing that I do that's beautiful is, I love it, is I do the bonding with baby in it.
Yeah.
And I learned that from Shirley Price and her daughter Penny Parr Price. Mm-hmm. And I first read that about bonding with baby, and I thought, oh, my God, when the baby's still part of you before the delivery, through the sense of smell and that hippocampus again, you can, in fact, if you diffuse when you're having loving thoughts and sending them to your unborn child, and you're smelling a beautiful combination of, I think I've written in, which is Shirley Price's recipe of Roman chamomile, mandarin and lavender.
Yeah.
If you diffuse those, when you use them again on the birth or when you're breastfeeding and you're happy and the baby's happy, you can use that to continue that bonding process. And then I give tips just for use if you've got out of balance, maybe a cold, a bit of morning sickness, skin fitness, sleep. I don't go beyond that. Mm-hmm. I don't go outside of that. And I give you some tips on stretch marks, because I think outside of that you need to go to an aromatherapist.
Yeah.
But there's enough there if you're just a beginner. And I give you the labor essentials, what to take into hospital with you, just, again, for emotional. I say don't use these oils unless a midwife is present. You know, I do say do not, a lot of cautions. I give lots of cautions. And the same with the baby. I love the caring for baby section.
Yeah, I love that as well.
Yeah, I love it too, because what I've done is I've got the baby essentials, which is your lavender floral water, your floral room spray, your baby massage oil with no essential oils in it for those first 6 months, and then a gentle baby blend, which is your own private blend, your, you know, synergistic blend, people are calling it, or your therapeutic blend.
Mm-hmm.
You make it up yourself and you've got it there. So you dispense the one drop into the milk before you put it into the bathtub, or the one drop into the diffuser after 6 months. And that's really carefully spelt out for mother and child. No, it took me 4 years to write it. It didn't take me 6 months. So I think
it's just sensational. And like, you've got bits in there about first aid, you've got tips for sleep, you've got ways that people can use the oils for themselves as well, like in their bath. And it's just, I can't recommend it enough. And it's also just aesthetically beautiful. So you can pick it up at any time and just be absorbed in it. So if people want to buy the book, where can they head?
Well, they can go to Hardy Grant, obviously, if you could go to there. They're my publisher, but it's in most bookstores in the country. Booktopia, Amazon. Yep. It's on Booktopia and Amazon.
Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure that we share a link directly on Instagram to purchase the book as well. Now, Pat, my last question is one that I ask everyone, and it is, what is your favorite plant? But in your case, we might ask, what is your favorite oil?
Well, look, everybody knows that jasmine was the first oil I met, so it definitely had a very big power on me, and it has a very special place for me, and I love it. But look, after you meet neroli from the orange blossom, I don't think... I use it, I sneak it in, and I've written this in the book, I sneak it into every blend I make for myself, whether it's a drop in my skincare, whether it's a drop in the bath, whether it's a drop and I'm doing a hair rinse, even if I'm having a stress inhalation, I'm feeling stressed, it's dubbed the rescue remedy of essential oils.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very good for nerves. It reduces that heart rate and that anxiety that you might have. You'll probably find if you buy it that you'll source it already blended in jojoba
to
make it accessible. And I've explained that in the blending, you know, for the two oil starter blends.
Yeah.
I ended with a description of neroli and rose for those who want to do that. And I say, look, source it in jojoba so you can at least trial the smell of it and how you relate to it instead of investing in a $150 or $80, $150 5 mil bottle or 4 mil bottle. I don't know if you can get it at that.
Yeah.
But neroli is the orange. It's the tree in nature, the Citrus aurantium subspecies amara, so the bitter orange tree, produces bitter orange from the peel of the fruit,
mm-hmm.
and it has its own set of chemicals, natural chemicals, and its own unique smell and its own action on the body. And then it also produces petitgrain from the twigs and the leaves, which again has completely different set of chemical constituents, a different action on the body. And then, of course, once it blooms and it produces that beautiful white flower with that quite strong, exquisite, intoxicating scent of the mix of the tree, of the bitter orange and the twigs. So when you're smelling it, it's that lovely bitter orange mix that comes from it in nature. It then has its own set of
chemistry.
And my favourite blend is putting the three together, bitter orange with petitgrain and neroli. It's to die for. Amazing. Two drops of each.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It was so amazing.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and learned a little bit more about aromatherapy and have a deeper understanding and respect for the powerful plant extracts we call essential oils. Make sure you hit subscribe and tell your friends about this podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram @_allthingsbotanical. Join me next fortnight as I continue our plant profile series.